Hey, welcome. I'm Chris Lopez, host of the Valley Pod. Joining us today in our studio on the south side of Alamosa is Dale Culver, U.S. Bureau of Land Management Field Manager for the San Luis Valley Field Office. Dale, it's good to see you, man. Good to meet you.
Thanks for letting me be here.
We've crossed paths at events and never got to sit down. Really appreciate you coming in.
Oh, appreciate the invite.
Yeah. Hey, let's get going this way. How do you become a field manager within the federal BLM agency? Let's start there. How do you get to that point? And go ahead.
No, I mean, that's a good question. And I don't know if there's a good answer I can give you. I mean, I've kind of got probably a little bit different path than a lot of the other field managers that are kind of my peers across the state. I spent 25 years with the National Park Service. Actually, most recently, 8 years of the Great Sand Dunes as the chief ranger. So I oversaw law enforcement, EMS, search and rescue, and all that. Completely different than the Bureau of Land Management and what we're doing there. But during the time with the Park Service, I did work as the acting superintendent quite a bit and stuff. So I had a lot of that management experience. And so really being a field manager is really managing, I mean, granted it's in the name, but managing not only the staff, but the resources there and making sure that the staff that is employed is getting the priority work and the mission of the BLM done. So,
you know, just listening to your path here in the Valley,
yeah,
and what you did here, the Great Sand Dunes, mm-hmm. I'm going to say that you probably have some of the best knowledge of the public lands that exist in the Valley of anyone now.
Yeah,
that's working here.
Could be, you know, and like I said, I worked there for 8 years, and I think it helped me to be able to kind of transition over to the BLM, had the knowledge of the resources, but also the partners that we work with. So not only did I know all the Park Service people from working there, but with our Forest Service partners, our Fish and Wildlife partners, our Bureau of Reclamation partners, and at that time, the Bureau of Land Management partners, as well as our state partners and our local partners. So it kind of helped me when I transitioned over that I already knew the folks. So it was an easy transition to be able to keep those relationships going to accomplish everything that we need to do. So
let me ask you, what's the size of BLM in the San Luis Valley?
So the San Luis Valley field office covers about a little over 500,000 acres that we have surface acres. Then we're about 650,000 subsurface acres. So we do have some mineral rights outside of what we already have. So.
And then with you, one of the things I was curious about is the acquisition that was announced last year, the La Jara Basin lands transfer or the acquisition BLM U.S. Forest Service was doing there. Have you closed on that acquisition BLM? Do you have those lands yet in your portfolio?
No, we're still working on them. So a little bit more background, you know, it's a 46,000 acre acquisition between Bureau of Land Management, the United States Forest Service, and Colorado Parks and Wildlife, all purchasing lands from Colorado State Land Board. That kind of, I think where you're talking about is in November, the State Land Board approved
right. That
sale to us.
Right.
So right now we're getting ready. We're still working through those final touches, just kind of like closing a house. You know, you got all that legal paperwork you got to do. If everything keeps going as we're hoping, we'll be able to close this fall. Don't have a quiet date yet, just kind of depending on all that legal paperwork and things like that.
But one of the concerns that came up during that state land board process and that last approval they gave was, would this particular federal administration honor how those lands are being used, or is that mission going to change once they transfer to management of the federal government, U.S. Forest Service, BLM? What's your thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, the whole plan will be the same as it was before. I mean, one of the critical things of getting that acquisition was making sure that land stayed open for public. Even under this administration, one of the emphases is public access to your public lands, the ability to hunt, fish, camp, and all those activities. And those things are going to still continue on BLM and Forest Service. We hope that it's a seamless transfer, but, you know, there's going to be some little nuances with federal government regulation, things like that. But we're planning to keep everything as it's going. So that also includes our grazers, the people that are up there grazing. They'll still be grazing. They'll still be able to keep doing the things that they've been doing, still be available for those traditional uses that folks did, you know, like I said, hunting, fishing, camping, firewood gathering. All those activities are still scheduled to keep going, and those are the things that make your public lands great, Forest Service, BLM, that those activities can go. You know, Parks is a little bit different with some of those, but definitely on BLM, we want you out there using your lands.
You know, it seems like, and tell me if I'm wrong, but it seems like BLM itself has been trying to move or pivot more to outdoor recreation, tourism opportunities. We saw the Lobatos Bridge project. Mm-hmm. We've seen what you've done to put a road up to Zapata Falls so people can get there, right?
Yeah.
And I wonder, do you still see yourself moving that direction or back to the traditional grazing, mining uses of BLM lands? How are you seeing that now?
I think we're still going to continue moving forward how we have been, you know, still working on recreation, still working on our grazing, still working on all those other things. You know, the BLM impact to the valley is $200 million into the valley of those things. Most of it is in recreation. So it is a huge economic driver for the valley from BLM. So we'll still continue to do all of our recreation. You know, one of the things you mentioned, kind of Zapata, we just did an addition to that campground. We just added 13 more sites up to there. And that's a hugely used campground by locals as well as folks coming in the valley.
Are you surprised at Zapata Falls Road and how much activity it's taken on since you've paved there, since you've done that work? I mean, I don't know if that's exceeding your expectations there.
Well, timing-wise, you know, it was kind of, you know, when the Park Service saw their huge influx of vegetation. You know, I have to go back to my Park Service days and remember, but 21, 22 was when sand dunes had 600,000 people. So we're right on the road to there. So if folks are stopping, are going up to the dunes, they're going to stop at Zapata Falls, and we appreciate that, and we want them to see it. So we've seen that increase. And then just having a road that doesn't knock your kidneys out of your body is just an added bonus for folks visiting up there.
So, you know, back in January of this year, there was a U.S. Interior order or U.S. Interior memo that came out that said they wanted to expand the hunting and fishing access on BLM lands. And I wondered how that order, if at all, is changing anything here in the valley. Are you opening up any other properties that aren't open up to fishing, hunting, that type of stuff?
Really, it has no effect on us here in the valley. Everything that we have is pretty much open, with the one exception of Blanco Wetlands. It is closed currently right now. But the closure time is not really within the significant hunting season, such as our waterfowl. You know, Blanco Wetlands is a great spot to waterfowl. In the fall, big game is going on very much there. So when it opens up in July 15th, we work with the state. They actually stock the ponds, continue that fishing. But right now, it's kind of closed for, you know, nesting birds, those migratory birds that are coming through, as well as there's quite a bit of just that elk activity for birthing areas, so they can come in and have a quieter place to do it. So
does BLM manage or involve in the wildlife refuges? Is all that all U.S. Fish and Game?
All those are going to be Fish and Wildlife Service. Yeah. So the Baca, the Alamosa, and Monta Vista are all Fish and Wildlife Service. Yeah.
You know, I was talking recently to my buddy J.D. Schmidt, who's a big sheep farmer in Conejos County. You may know him.
Yeah.
He's a sheep grazer. I have another friend who's a cattle grazer. How are the lands today in the period we're in? Drought, extensive aridification. I know JD's concerned about grazing. How are the grasses or the lands handling today's climate change and what we're witnessing?
Yeah. So what we're seeing, what we have to do is what's called land health. So we go out and we look at the allotments, such as JD's or other folks, as we go out and look at them, and just to see how those grasses are doing. And so, like, this year is a little bit rough because we are in that drought period. We haven't had those rains. So This year, they're not setting up as well as they like. In previous years, you know, a couple of years ago, we had great rains and we had a lot of forage. So it's a little bit different. But overall, you know, we're seeing some different shifts in vegetation. Our cold seasons, which are starting to come on now, are a little bit diminished, but our fall grasses are still doing good. Overall, most of our allotments are actually doing pretty well and thriving. Of course, like I said, this year we'll see how it is just because of the, you know, lack of moisture.
Is that number of individual grazers that are on BLT, has that been reducing because operations reduce, or are you maintaining the number of ranchers who want BLM leases to graze land?
Yeah, we've not reduced any of our numbers for permittees or animal unit months, which are AUMs, that we look at. So we're not seeing any kind of reductions in that. Those numbers have been going for quite a few years, and we don't really see any reduction in that forecasting just because of how our land is still doing pretty well.
Interesting. Hey, we're talking to Dale Culver. He's with the U.S. Bureau of Land Management. We're going to take a quick break. This is the Valley Pod. We'll be right back.
Looking for the freshest food in the valley? Introducing the new SLB Local Foods Directory, where you can meet your neighbors and eat better. From colorful potatoes and crisp greens to farm-fresh eggs, dairy, and meat, find exactly who grows your food right here in the valley. Support local, eat fresh, and strengthen our community. Are you a local farmer or producer? Add your information. Visit elemosacitizen.com today and discover the freshest food from the heart of the valley. Support comes from Colorado Housing and Finance Authority. CHFA supports Colorado home ownership and works with a statewide network of lenders. Visit chfainfo.com/your home. CHFA is an equal housing lender.
Hey, we're back. This is the Valley Pod. We're talking to Dale Culver. He manages BLM for the San Luis Valley Field Office. Before we return to that conversation, I just want to note Cinco de Mayo is coming up. May 1st. The Sangre de Cristo National Heritage Area has their annual Cinco de Mayo block party. That's Friday, May 1st. And then on Saturday, May 2nd, the city of Monte Vista holds its sixth annual Cinco de Mayo Street Festival. That's coming up. Just want to put that on your radar. The Cinco de Mayo celebrations, May 1 in Alamosa, May 2 in Monte Vista. By the time we get to the Cinco itself, I may be cerveza out, Dale. I'm just saying that. Hey, I want to ask you a couple of other things. Let's talk about, tell us about Almadec's mineral exploration that's happening in Cornelius County, because that's another leg of BLM, if you will.
Correct.
Exploration, minerals, yeah. Et cetera. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so this company has reached out to us exercising some of their rights under the 1872 mining law. So that's the regulation that allows them to do some exploratory drilling. So what they've come to us and stated they'd like to do or will do on BLM is a series of six test drills. And they're looking for minerals. I mean, it's not uncommon for a lot of these companies just to do exploratory drilling in different places. You know, they looked at the geology of the valley and they thought that there may be a potential for minerals. I think they're particularly looking for gold or copper, those. So they've put in a notice to us, kind of working through the process. And so when that gets approved, and not really approved by the BLM, but get started, they'll do these drills looking for these materials. Overall, it's going to be less than an acre of land that they're going to be impacting, and really it's an in quick drill, kind of the same size and of a water drill system, so it's really not a lot of impact on the ground. Once they get done with their drilling, they'll take all their cores back to wherever they're based out of. There's companies based out of Canada. They'll go up there, they'll examine them, look and see if they find anything.
And if they do,
before that, they actually reclaim all the land. So it actually will look like they were never here.
Gotcha.
That's one of the requirements that we have for the BR of Land Management. That's the only part we can really control is them reclaiming the land where they're at. So once they get done, they'll go back and they'll analyze them. And I'm sorry.
If they do find something.
Yeah. And that time they'll start working on a proposal. Then that's when they'll start working with us. A lot of these explorations, it's about a 1 in 10,000 chance that they'll actually find something productive. So the chance that it may happen is pretty low, but if they do find something, then they'll go through the process. And it's a lengthy process of permitting and things like that.
Is there a public review process in this particular permit or this particular application for a permit, or how does the permitting happen? What does BLM require other than the reclamation, it sounds like, of the ground?
So there's really not a public view comment of it. There's not any what's called NEPA, which is the National Environmental Protection Act, which kind of says if there's any actions on government lands, we have to analyze them. Those things don't come into play of those because it's all based on the 1872 mining law. So BLM, what we do is if they come to us or if they were to go to the Forest Service, we would look at first making sure there's no cultural impacts. I mean, especially the area they're at, huge area for cultural concerns. Once that has been what we consider clear, then we would start working with them. They're required to do a bond. So also then give us the money up front in case they don't rehab it so we can rehab it and then go from there. So,
interesting. Yeah. Are you seeing more interest in mining exploration or exploration on BLM lands here in the valley any more than you had been? Or
no, we haven't. And these guys just kind of, I don't want to say they came out of the blue, but you know, they're in the business of looking. So they're looking at geology. They're looking at the strata to see what looks like it. But we've not seen any kind of increases since I've been here. Like I said, I've only been here for 2.5 years, but even prior to that, really not there.
Is that up in the King's mining area?
Right around there. Yeah. It's just a little bit north of the 142.
Highway 142 up in there?
Correct.
Interesting. Yep. Almadex. That's an interesting exploration, if you will. We'll see where that goes. But that's another example, though, of what BLM does. Because you guys, you know, everything we've just gone through, you have a lot of missions or responsibilities of how you're trying to get usage of the public land you manage.
Yeah, Bureau of Land Management is a multi-use agency. So, you know, we'll have timber, grazing, mineral exploration, and recreation in there. So
how much of a swivel do you have to keep your head on as you're figuring out everything the federal government wants you to do? How much is your head on a swivel these days?
We kind of look at, we've kind of been here for a while. You know, we've been in the valley for 60 some odd years. So we kind of know what resources are out there. So we kind of know where we're going. Every once in a while, you'll kind of get those one-offs a little bit, like the expiration request. But a lot of the stuff that we're seeing is what we traditionally do, you know, our grazing, our recreation, things like that.
Yeah, really interesting. I really enjoyed learning about BLM here in the valley, because I didn't realize the Pot of Falls until we were talking before about some of the recreation that's happening here. Yeah. You had mentioned the cultural sites, too, and how BLM manages or looks after those. And one of them that you and I've talked about is Penitente Canyon. And we were talking about someone tried to touch up the mural that's there. Whatever happened to that? Just out of curiosity.
It's got an interesting history to it. So if you look back and, you know, we've kind of narrowed it down to back in the 80s when it was done. So there's BLM. So it was done without permitting, conversation. So in the scheme of things, it's almost vandalism, but it's not. And it's persisted throughout the years, and it's now become one of those iconic things within the canyon. So, unfortunately, someone thought it needed to be touched up. Didn't quite touch it up correctly or appropriately, and so now it's not what it was before. For us, our big concern is really the history of the canyon and how it impacts. You know, you mentioned the cultural. So we want to work with our tribal partners on their views of it, but also for folks that know the history of Penitente, I mean, not only was there our tribal partners there, but a lot of Spanish history. And so looking at how do we balance those two influences to determine where we go next. Nothing goes quick in the federal government, and those are one of those processes, because we do want to have good conversations and make a proper decision that unfortunately maybe not everyone will be happy, but what is best for the history of that canyon as well as the history of the people that had been there.
Are there other cultural locations you would note around the valley that BLM manages or is around, like Penitente Canyon?
Oh, the valley's full of different locations.
What's some of your favorite ones?
Well, I mean, Penitente is good. The stuff that's along the Rio Grande, some of those ones, even, you know, right down from Lobatos Bridge down through there.
Yeah.
There's some great through there. We don't try to mention them a lot. And not that we don't want public to see, but we also, our job is also to protect those. So if we start going, oh, yeah, if you go to this spot, there's this one. There's the chance or likelihood of people vandalizing them, and then that history is gone. So it's, we walk a fine line of letting people know what's on their public land, but yet we don't to protect it. And so,
okay. So when we get off the air with Dale, we're going to figure out a couple of those locations that we're not going to tell anyone else. Chris Mondragon and myself, Owen Woods, we're going to go check them out. We're not going to say anything, though. Appreciate you noting that for us, Dale. Really appreciate you coming in. It's a great conversation. So much happening with BLM.
Yeah, appreciate the opportunity to come in and talk to you about the BLM.
Hey, you've been listening to the Valley Pod and our episode with BLM Field Manager Dale Culver. This episode of the Valley Pod is produced by Chris Mondragon and is part of the Alamosa Citizen.com podcast lineup. See you around the valley.